Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we talked to political expert David Paul Kuhn, and he's going to tell us what to expect in the upcoming election and beyond. And then, of course, the news as well. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. Summer's in full swing. Tommy John is proud to announce their new essentials, guaranteed to redefine comfort, and especially when it's hot. And it matters, man. It is hot out there. They have the new hammock pouch, max support for your manhood. Everything is amazing about their number one customer favorite, by the way. Second Skin Plus hammock-shaped pouch for the boys. I wear Tommy John every day. I'm wearing the T-shirt right now and the underwear right now. Made from ultra lightweight, breathable, anti-odor, air mesh fabric. The ladies' bra, new comfort, smoothing fabric. They have underwear, they have bralettes and underwear. Breathable, lightweight, accentuates what you love and smooths what you don't. It's Tommy John. Right, Dawson?
For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Man, Darren from somewhere up in Canada. Rich man, poor man for you. You're the subject of a federal investigation. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
David Paul Kuhn is our guest. He's an author and a news person as well. The book, The Hard Hat Riot, Nixon, New York City, and the Dawn of the White Working Class Revolution. It's available as we speak on Amazon, and we can, nice to meet you, David.
Nice to meet you too. Thanks for having me.
James Carville says, perhaps the best book ever on how Democrats lost the white working class. So let's discuss that. Have Democrats lost the white working class, and how do they get them back?
Certainly, they've lost the white working class over the last half century, you know, since the Nixon era, since what we call Reagan Democrats. Joe Biden's a small step towards getting them back. He's obviously a much more difficult Democrat to caricature for Donald Trump. It's unclear how much Joe Biden will seize the opportunity. Right now, he's sort of running a I want to get out of the way of a car accident election strategy. Basically, he wants this to be like anyone would of either party. He wants this to be a referendum on the unpopular incumbent. That said, you know, he did this Made in America speech. He's talked about bringing manufacturing back. So he's making gentle forays into the what we would call the Reagan Democrats, the white working class that once certainly was sort of the bedrock of the FDR coalition, the old Democratic coalition. And in earlier years, were not considered sort of anathema to liberalism, but a part of it.
Do you think there's going to be debates? And do you think Biden is and Trump will debate? I just asked the same question twice.
They will debate. And I think that, again, here too, Biden's played this strategically smart. He's sticking to norms. He's waiting to see if Trump will you know, in some ways try to avoid the scenario. I think there will be debates. I think that, you know, even if you set aside all the peculiarities of Donald Trump, any incumbent president is likely to lose that first debate. You can ask Barack Obama's advisors. You can ask George W. Bush advisors about that. And so Biden comes in both with the advantage of relatively low expectations, ironically against Trump. And I would say that Trump needs the debates much more than Joe Biden because he is the steward of a sinking ship at this point.
Well, wouldn't it be smart for Biden to just go, all right, we'll do one debate. And yeah, typically the incumbent has a lot more baggage to deal with because they've been running the country and there's plenty of blemishes and black eyes in the past, you know, almost 4 years. So you come in, so you say typically the sort of fresh person comes up, starts talking about all the things the person did wrong while they've been running the country for 4 years, and they win that debate and then don't do a second debate. Is that a possibility?
It's happened before. It happened in 1980. It's unlikely. I think we've gotten used to this norm of 2 to 3 debates. You know, it's really just like with everything, it's hard to put the genie back in the bottle. It's the big factor for Donald Trump, again, just separating aside what's so generous about Donald Trump, is that presidents are isolated, and they are protected for years from really by yes men and yes women, and they are protected from just blowback. And the challenger, in this case, Joe Biden, almost always comes out of a tumultuous primary battle, and they're just much sharper. And I think that, you know, if you look at Joe Biden's gotten a lot of grief in the media for how he performed in those debates. He performed well enough. And I think if you look at how he performed in the one-on-one debate with Bernie Sanders, I think he proved enough up to the task. Donald Trump has a difficult debate ahead of him when they do face each other, even though he needs it much more than Joe Biden, because Donald Trump needs something, if I can use a cliche of politics, some sort of game changer.
Brian.
David, you've hit on two things now that I personally believe, as much as I believe anything these days in politics, but two things that I believe for a while and now I'm starting to see seep into the sort of consciousness. One being, tell me what you think about this. Trump and his supporters have painted themselves into this impossible corner now by portraying Biden as this dementia-riddled madman. When he comes out and has what is very likely to be a very down the middle, like you alluded to in the Democratic debates, boring debate. Like he was just kind of in the middle. He wasn't great. He wasn't terrible. He was just Joe Biden. When he comes out and does that, which is honestly the most likely outcome, he could strip over himself and say some nonsense, but let's be honest, the most likely outcome is he's going to be boring Joe Biden. It's going to this whole house of cards about him being, you know, dementia riddled and insane is going to just fall apart.
Unless Trump to a push-up contest.
I mean, the punditocracy, we have to remember, was against Biden when they would analyze those debates, as if, because what the pundits forget is that, you know, they're looking at witticisms, you know, and who
zingers.
Who fences better verbally, when, of course, the average American could give a crap about any of that. But they're going to be favorable towards Joe Biden when it's Biden versus Trump. So I think you're exactly right. Biden just has to play it down the middle. He can be a little boring. He doesn't need to be. You know, it's sort of like someone like me, if I'm on a comedy show, I'm not there to tell the jokes. Biden just has to play it down the middle.
Play safe.
Play safe as he has. Because, again, he wants this to be a referendum on the incumbent. And as much as Donald Trump would wish it to be a choice, one thing you have to give the Democratic Party credit for is that in the end, they chose a more practical option, maybe the more boring, certainly the more boring.
Certainly the more boring option.
But at the same time, they learned my book, you know, harkens back to the late 60s and early 70s. And it's fair to say that there were some lessons learned from the McGovern debacle of 1972.
Let me just say, because the other thing you mentioned that was very prescient that I'd seen, former guest of the show, Matt Lewis, wrote about the same thing, which is the problem for the Republicans is that Biden has never been the conservative boogeyman. He's not Hillary Clinton. He's not Barack Obama. He doesn't incite that kind of venom, which frankly, you know, drove him Trump to victory last time. And he's just so down the middle and so moderate that it's going to be hard to work up that kind of universal animus towards him.
Well, and to your point, to pile on with how moderate he is, he has the support of Mitt Romney. He has the support of George W. Bush. I mean, how to add to Brian's question, how much could that help?
Well, I mean, first we have to say that the anti-Trump coalition is much bigger than the Democratic coalition, right? We have four-star general siding with AOC, right? They're all in this giant anti-Trump coalition.
Strange bedfellows.
Yeah, so that's one thing that's going on here. You know, it's interesting because if you look at what Biden's proposed, he's very progressive compared to Democrats before him. He's just not as progressive as the highly liberal activist left that sort of dominates the Twitter right now. Mm-hmm. As you know, he's very hard to caricature because, you know, Joe, he's still kind of Joey Biden. He's got an affectation that doesn't fit what they used to call the San Francisco Democrat. Mm-hmm. He just doesn't fit the caricature. And to some extent, the caricature often affirmed by many on the far left that, you know, that Joe Biden, he's just not that, he's just not that. He's just not the aloof liberal elitist that Trump would ideally like to run against.
It feels like Biden should be steering it toward the middle as much as possible. And I feel like sometimes if he gets, or do you feel like when he's like, I'm going to have Beto O'Rourke come in here and we're going to get this gun thing cleaned up, you know, and Beto's like, I want to take away your guns. Like, there's some pretty left, pretty progressive AOCs and Betos and stuff. Do you feel, I don't feel like he needs them to win. I feel like he should distance himself from that side of the, I mean, that hard left and just kind of hang out in the middle. Does that make sense to you?
That's conventional presidential strategy, right? You run to your flank in the primary and you run to the center in the general election. You know, in the primary, Biden did make that mistake. Clearly, he raised his hand. I think objectively, let's just put it this way. I think the objectively politically precarious position of offering free healthcare to anyone who crosses the border and all that means in terms of providing a social safety net to anybody who just enters American territory is, you know, it's a hard place for a Democrat to argue, partly because they venerate Western Europe. But one reason the Western European social safety nets work so well is they have very strict, border controls, if you will. So there's an inherent tension there. I don't want to digress too much into that. But there were definitely positions in the Democratic primary that Biden took that would be hard in a general election. But I would say in the general election, he's been pretty smart. Don't forget, when the defund the police mantra sort of entered our wider vernacular, Biden came out against that pretty quickly.
Very smart.
While affirming the ethos of it, right?
We're living in such a weird world where it's like, they wanted to defund the police. He was against it. Very shrewd.
Smart.
Savvy.
So true.
With cat-like instincts.
Veteran,
like,
veteran move. Yeah.
What a weird world we live in.
We're living in a weird world. Like,
bendable position.
Yeah, he's like some sort of chess grand champion or something because he's like, I think we need the police. Wow.
Whoa. Bold.
A bold stroke. Yeah, I feel like he should just kind of go into the four corner offense. You know, you got a nice lead, run that clock out, you know, really you can
hit your free throws.
Yeah. I mean, for the sports metaphor
and kneel on the ball,
there's been, it's like but it's true. It can happen. So what happened when, Julio Cesar Chavez, not the guy who organized the grape boycott, David probably knows it, but Julio Cesar Chavez was like 90-0 or like 88-0 or something. His record as a middleweight boxer was insane. And I don't know who he was fighting, Pennell Whitaker or one of those guys. But the guy was up on him. He just beat him every round. It was the one where he got knocked out with 2 seconds left and Lou Duva was in the corner, whatever it was. I'll bring this metaphor home. But you have this guy and you've won every round and now we're going into the 12th round. And even though it's not a fan favorite and even though it's not a crowd pleaser, all you have to do is stay away from this guy for one round. Just don't trade. Don't get in and mix it up with him. And his corner man, who would be a horrible political consultant, Lou Duva, was like, you got to get this round. You got to go take it to him. And he took it to him. And no, it wasn't Frankie Randall. Sorry. It was either Pernell Whitaker or...
there couldn't have been that many fights where he was knocked out.
It ended at the very last second. You'll see it in a second. Anyway, he won after him and literally with 3 seconds left, Julio Cesar Chavez caught up to him because they were trading and he knocked him out with no time on the clock and walked out of there with the win. And what I'm saying is if I'm in Biden's corner, I'm saying, get on your bike, just move around, just stay away. Just pump that jab out. Don't need to get in the middle of the ring and tangle it up. Come on, Max Bata.
I love that boxing metaphor because It's Mossad, right? Tie him up, pull him close, let the heavyweight continue flailing, who's desperate for a knockout, let him exhaust himself by flailing away with those haymakers. That's exactly right. And it's boring, especially boring for fight fans when combatants do that. But that's exactly the right metaphor for how any challenger would want to play this campaign when the incumbent is so unpopular.
So quick question, and you basically just answered it in the last 4.5 seconds, but about
Meldrick
a minute and a half
Taylor.
Ago, I was thinking, oh, good.
Meldrick Taylor, fucking Duva. Come on.
Thank God.
Or you think I had like 100-something fights.
I know. It's like 88. Because this guy knocked him out with 10 seconds left. Sorry. Go ahead, Gina.
So we had the exact opposite criticism of Hillary Clinton, right? She wanted to hang back and let this guy hang himself, but the exact opposite happened. So to put it in layman's terms for the rest of us, what makes Joe different?
Well, I mean,
than that strategy.
The biggest dynamic difference is that now Trump is an incumbent. And in 2016, the Democratic Party had been in charge of the White House for 8 years. And there just was no divorcing Hillary Clinton from the Democratic establishment.
So in that essence, she's sort of acting as a Barack Obama proxy and would have had those same issues and advantages.
Yeah, I mean, George H.W. Bush was able to run on the Reagan era in 1988 positively, right? Because Reagan was relatively popular. So, but the problem for Barack Obama's inheritor, Hillary Clinton in this case, was twofold. One, it was a highly polarized country. And two, she was affiliated with really the worst stereotypes of the Democratic establishment, right? The corporatist, liberal, elite establishment, which ironically is not, of course, her original background, but it certainly is where she had affiliated her identity. And it didn't help when she called, half of America deplorable. It sort of affirmed the stereotype. So it's just a very different context. Now Donald Trump is the incumbent, and it's for someone who just looks at the whole world as an outsider, despite his billions of dollars, it's a very precarious position for any incumbent to run. But his other problem is that he didn't govern, especially in the first 2 years when the Republicans had Congress. He didn't dance with the issues and the people that brought him to that dance, which is the white working class. His tax cut was Paul Ryan's tax cut. It was a gift to the very people who didn't need a tax cut. So he also didn't play to his base. And so like the big difference between 1972 and today is that when Nixon, for example, ran in 72 against McGovern, 60% of independents approved of Nixon. That's not the case with Donald Trump. So Donald Trump is trying to emulate some sort of Nixon playbook on many levels, but it's just a completely different context.
Do you have any thoughts about, you hear guys like, I don't know, The Rock running for president. I don't know, if you have 200 billion Instagram followers, maybe you could get a few votes. I mean, obviously Trump is president, for Christ's sake. I mean, are we going to that place where we're going to just have folks who currently are in show business or other, Elon Musk or I don't know. Like, I mean, are we going there? You think that's going to be a trend? Have you heard of anything legitimate?
Well, I mean, clearly, Adam, I'm sure people who were powerful and rich who thought, well, if Donald Trump can be president, why can't I? And they started to look at themselves and see a president in the mirror, like much like most senators after 2016. I mean, we thought in the era that it was television, right? And to be sure, television changed the presidency. It made it much more intimate. It brought a show business quality to the presidency. It correlated with the Madison Avenue advertising of the president and packaging of the president as a commodity. But I mean, the loss of power of the establishments, whether it's in the internet age and the social media age, and has really empowered any outsider with a huge following. So I think we are in a stage with the two parties, establishments weaker than they've ever been in modernity. I think we are in an age where there could be a much more savvy media figure who could, seize this moment. Listen, both parties, Americans are not a two-party people, I always try to point out. They're just forced to choose between the two parties. And most elections for most Americans come down to the lesser of two evils. They're often voting against someone rather than voting for someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And And, you know, we've been saying it for a long time, people like me, but there is a hunger out there for someone who's not betrothed to either party establishment and sort of is an atypical candidate. And, you know, Donald Trump could have been that if he was savvier.
That was the promise.
Yeah, that was a promise. If he was smarter, savvier, truer to his base, he had a chance for that after he won the presidency. Obviously, that was all smothered within months. But he could easily be a beta test for a much more either worse demagogic figure or a populist that comes out of our celebrity culture, which I would say sadly trumps so much of everything today.
Zuckerberg Jenner 2024.
Yeah, who knows? Well, not Zuckerberg thinks he's presidential material. I don't think he has a chance in hell. But I do think someone like The Rock, or someone who has gravitas, who appears really well on TV, who appears just genial and has a huge following and also is savvy about issues. It's all, I mean, not The Rock, but someone who has a huge national presence and can supersede both parties. There's potential, but we also have to remember that not even Teddy Roosevelt could make a serious third party bid and win the presidency in 1912. And Teddy Roosevelt was a war hero, a national figure, brilliant. So it's a very hard road to toe.
That's why we got to tear a statue down. Longs we're talking about him. Yeah, sorry.
But didn't the entire country think that Oprah was a viable candidate? And when she says she's not interested in, I think there was a collective, aw, because that did seem realistic.
Yeah, she's certainly viable. I mean, I would say that she has some pretty far out there views on certain issues, and I would say, you would want this person would have to be someone who's sort of used to sparring in the daily media because I don't think, you know, this happens with first ladies, right? When a first lady doesn't enter the political fray, they take on a most sainted view from partisans on both sides. But, and this happened with Hillary Clinton, but once Hillary Clinton re-entered the political fray, that general aura around her really did dissipate quickly because she was seen as a partisan figure. And I think that would happen to Oprah. That said, obviously Oprah is a unique figure in American life. And, you know, she has as much opportunity as anyone just to use her celebrity towards political ends.
Well, I think part of what's going on is the misery index is so high in public life, especially being the president, that I don't know that comfortable people want to give up their comfortable, sometimes semi-private life. You know, a lot of the people we're talking about wouldn't want to expose their taxes, wouldn't want to leave themselves open to a constant barrage of, you know, criticism, especially also you got to think about your family. Do you want to bring your family into this? Like, we're not talking about a guy who's a roofer who's going to, you know, played by Kevin Costner in an 80s movie. We're talking about guys and gals that are super comfortable, get to go out on David Geffen's yacht for 3 weeks at a time, giving it all up to just be killed by a thousand razor cuts by the media and society and Twitter, and then have and God knows what these people have lurking in their closets, some picture of them, some tweets that weren't great. I mean,
Ghislaine will let us know soon enough.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm saying is I think a lot of people are going to preemptively go, you know what? I am not going to go down this road. I'm not going to drag my family down this road. Look, I have all the money in the world. What I don't have is time. You know, a lot of these people are 60, 70 years old. And it's like, I got 10 years to see if I can go through $1 billion and see how much time I can spend with Geffen on his yacht. I don't know that Oprah would want to put herself through that. Go ahead, David. Sorry. Oh, David froze up.
I think that's true of a lot of people. I think that's true of a lot of people. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes,
that's true of a lot of people in the public spotlight. Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
Yep. Yes.
Okay. I think that's true. A lot of people in the spotlight, whether they come from media or Hollywood, they clearly are afraid of going through the gauntlet of the tear down heroes media, and that's always been the case in American life. But in the Twitter age and in the age where all privacy is public and surely every affair could come out, if you will. I think a lot of people are afraid of how it could both destroy their star or blemish their star, but also scar their family.
David, do you have any predictions as we start to wind down? Do you? I mean, it looks like Biden's the clear leader at this point. We've discussed kind of what the strategy would be, but God, in this crazy world we're living in, who the hell knows? Things change, stop on a dime and change direction in a heartbeat. But predictions. Let's make a prediction for this election. But then what? Because Biden doesn't seem like a two-term guy to me because of his age and because of feel like he's slowing down. What do you think?
Well, the one certainty of change is that change will come, and it's where political eternity still from Election Day. And as much as Donald Trump faces serious headwinds, those wins could change. But of course, if Election Day was today, Donald Trump would likely suffer a significant defeat. But Election Day isn't today, and we've seen in the age of coronavirus and Black Lives Matter, et cetera, how quickly the news cycle can change. So it's not clear what will happen in the months ahead. I will say that, you know, as I know, I talked earlier about the anti-Trump coalition, the Democratic coalition. If Trump were to lose, the anti-Trump coalition will disappear, and the Democratic coalition isn't as large, and Democrats will face the same problems with the white working class and with House elections that they faced in the past, and they'll have to deal with the same demographic difficulties that have beguiled them for decades. So I mean, whoever wins this presidential election, the long-term challenges of both parties, and obviously I can name them for the Republicans as well, will post-date President Trump, just as they predated him.
Mike August sent me an article, I think, on maybe CNN had posted record profits for this quarter, the last year, or whatever. Now, if you watch CNN, it is... they've completely just become the anti-Trump network. They literally just dedicated their time to anti-Trump. But do they want Trump out of there? Because I don't know. what is CNN going to do the day after Biden wins the election? I'd be curious. Like, if you got hold of some of the higher ups at CNN or many networks, and you go, I know you hate this guy, but do you want him to leave? Like, isn't this the best business ever with him around? Every story?
It clearly, Donald Trump has clearly been good for the business models of CNN, MSNBC, and I should note the New York Times. Mm-hmm. It's clearly led to record readership, historic ratings, booms, and we'll see. So there's been this odd relationship, right? As CNN, for example, did become really vociferously anti-Trump and sort of leave traditional journalism behind and become more activist. They're reliant on their antagonists, right? In that way, it's like extremes in politics. The far left and far right in some ways depend on each other because they feed off one another. And I would say that the mainstream media feeds off the tension with Donald Trump, just like Donald Trump feeds off the tension with the mainstream media.
Yeah, I'm worried. Well, I'm not really worried, but I wonder if the business model is good short term, but not good big picture. If you kind of just, it kind of reminds me, I don't know, another weird example, but in the 2000s, like the early 2000s, stock car racing and NASCAR and Fox like kind of took off. Like there was a lot of stock car racing in the 70s and the 80s, and then it kind of cooled off. And then at some point it came back. And when it came back, Fox was like, we're doing stock car weekend, NASCAR weekend, truck series Wednesday night. And they put so much stock, pardon the pun, in NASCAR that they kind of burnt themselves out on it, and then they kind of took a decade off. Like, people are like, all right, it's too much already. Like, that's enough. I worry that CNN has put so much stock in Trump that if he doesn't get reelected, they're kind of just sitting there with, I don't know what they'll have to report. They'll come up with something, but I feel like maybe they made a deal with the devil. I don't know. Thoughts?
I mean, it's they're going to pivot like Fox did when Barack Obama was no longer president, right? They're going to pivot like any idea, like MSNBC and Fox do. Like they just entered the ideological media foray, and they're going to pivot once the foe of their ideology is no longer in the White House. It is true, objectively, that the media. So right, put aside how coronavirus has hampered advertising across from Hollywood to the news media, right? Or just revenue streams from Hollywood to the news media. And, you know, Hollywood can't shoot, but the news media is suffering for advertising. So it's true that Donald Trump was mitigated what has been a long-term decline in internet age for many leading outlets. And that little, you know, boonlet is going to disappear when Donald Trump disappears. So I think that what you will see, practically speaking, even in the less ideological media, is you're going to see some of the leading outlets suffer some of the long-term trends that were staved off with the heightened interest in American politics that came with Donald Trump. Because, you know, whether you hate him or love him or somewhere in between, Donald Trump made politics much more interesting for most Americans. And when he leaves the national stage, and certainly many people would prefer this, it will be much of that audience will leave with him.
He's followed a basically the same trajectory as Hulk Hogan. He started off beloved,
you know, American.
Then he went Hollywood, right, Brian?
Hollywood Hogan with the beard. And
then, bad guy.
They have the same hair, I think, naturally.
Yeah. So we'll keep watching. I will say the name of the book, The Hard Hat Riot, Nixon, New York City, and the Dawn of the White Working Class Revolution. It's available now on Amazon. Thanks for joining us, David. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
We'll have you back anytime, and I'll tell you now about Simply Safe. Most home security companies trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, lousy customer service support. It's a no-brainer. Simply Safe. Two I's in there, by the way. Simply Safe. Everything to protect your home, an arsenal of sensors and cameras for every room, window, and door, tailored specifically for your home. Professional monitoring day and night, ready to send the police, fire, medical professionals, whatever you need, it's all there, and they can all be alerted through Simply Safe. You can set it up in under an hour, just peel and stick, no technician required, batteries last up to 10 years, no pushy sales guys, no hidden fees, no fine print, starts at just $15 a month. U.S. News and World Report named it best overall home security of 2020. Right, Dawson?
Head to simplysafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's simplysafe.com/Adam to make sure that they know that our show sent you.
Thank you, David Paul Kuhn, for joining us today. And we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and do the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Break. Viral, all those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, fresh off the heels of a presidential race discussion, Kanye West, he's not done. He held his first presidential rally Sunday in North Charleston, South Carolina. It had a bit of controversy. TMZ described it as unorganized and rowdy, adding that he didn't even have a podium or a microphone to address the crowd. He was just right up in everybody's face. And they said Kanye rambled through a number of topics, oftentimes incoherently. One of the most outrageous things he said was about Harriet Tubman. Here's a clip from someone in the crowd with their commentary at the very end.
So that's a Stephen move. When Harriet Tubman... Well, Harriet Tubman never actually freed the slaves. She just had the slaves go work for other white people.
Y'all, we leaving right now.
So... A lot of rambling. At another point, he got very personal when he brought up abortion. He broke down in tears and admitted he didn't want North, his first child, with his then girlfriend, Kim Kardashian. Meanwhile, West did not submit any of the 10,000 in signatures he needed by noon Monday to get on the ballot in South Carolina for the presidential election.
Hey, I don't want to sound like Dr. Drew, but remember when Anna Nicole Smith was sort of falling apart before our very eyes?
I'm glad you brought this up. Please bring this up with Dr. Drew. Who is letting him do this?
And
well, that's what, yeah.
We're like, look at her. She's stumbling all over the stage. She's slurring her words. Look at her. She's
a mess.
Look at her. She's dead in Vegas. Like,
that's what I mentioned the other day on the show when we were talking about Kanye. I was trying to do it very delicately, so maybe the point wasn't made. But when I said, you know, Amanda Bynes and Britney Spears, and we kind of, is there a touch of a mental issue that we have to deal with? And I mean, this looks like an episode. So isn't this when the family comes into play and does something?
I guess. I don't know. Like when Kanye says, here's what I'm going to do. I don't know. Good luck stopping him from doing it, I guess. I don't know. If he says, I'm going to one of the Carolinas, I'm having a rally, does Kim get to grab the keys from the private jet and go, no, and like drop them down her bra or something? By the way, remember
never
when women
it.
Used to do that? Used to just drop stuff down their
bra?
It was as though it was gone.
To.
Right.
That's my move.
So I don't know, but it seems like he's having an episode, seems like he needs some medication, seems like something needs to be adjusted in his life.
And when we talk about celebrities in politics, after, you know, Trump kind of breaks the mold on, you know, reality star, whatever, businessman can do it, do we just think it's funny now to go scorched earth on this country and say, why not vote him in? Who cares? It's all hilarious and, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. Will there be that contingency? It says he has 2% of the vote. But are there people that are just looking to watch this world burn? Hilarious?
I don't know. We could have another Richard Kim incident from my high school, from North Hollywood High. Which I'll explain in a second. You know, Max Pata, when you showed me my yearbook from the 11th grade and they showed like the student council, you could see Richard Kim in that in that mix. And he was like making you could tell it was him because he was making he was flexing. I think he was like making a muscle or something. But yeah, we had an auditorium. You know, when you'd have events. Like the best, there were three good days for me at school. There was walk into your classroom and see the projection there, the projector
yeah.
there. Oh. Like, oh, we're showing a film. Oh, awesome. I don't have to do anything for this. And if it was a big fat reel, it was good. Like, oh, that's going to eat up the whole goddamn class. All right, good. I'm going to just sit. So there was movie day was a good thing. Walk into the class, substitute teacher, good day. And then the best day of all was the election, government, whatever it was, the auditorium
speeches.
Day. Yeah.
Yeah, assembly.
The assembly day. The assembly day. Like, oh, we're going to get up and go to the auditorium. And Richard Kim, we went to the basketball auditorium at North Hollywood High. And Richard Kim was this crazy Asian guy, funny sense of humor. Do you have that picture of him? There's the school assembly, and it's a lot of Jewish kids. And then one guy's got his arm up, and he's making a muscle, and it's on the left side, and it's Richard Kim. He was the kind of guy who wore like you know a shirt and a tie with a short sleeve and stuff like that. This is a little bit off. And there's Richard Kim.
And, happy to be alive.
And when it came time for him to give his speech for why he wanted to be the vice president or the treasurer or whatever, just the entire in a big goof, the entire auditorium just exploded into chants of Richard. Richard, Richard, we love you, Richard, Richard. And he'd like calm everyone down, and like the principal would come out and like calm everyone down. Now, no one liked Richard Kim. We didn't even know who he was. We just ironically went nuts for Richard Kim. So Richard, then he came up again. He's like, I need your vote. And we'd go, Richard, and then this entire auditorium was screaming like it was the finals of a basketball playoffs or something. And I don't know what Richard ever thought of it because no one thought of him. We just decided it'd be a funny goof if we voted Richard Kim in to do something because we didn't know who he was or what he was doing or if he would do a good job. We thought it was funny. So maybe we're
it didn't matter.
It didn't matter. Maybe we're in a Richard Kim moment. Maybe that's
Richard
what's
Kim
happen.
Effect.
The Richard Kim effect. Yeah, I forgot he was making a muscle and standing in that group. I wonder what he's up to, man. He's got to be doing something.
He's a very common.
Well,
name.
We postponed. We're long overdue for the. I don't remember, Brian, what you called it, but the month long. Adam, this is your life. We got to add Richard.
Oh yeah, the Adam History Month.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like one of those guys that would walk around with a briefcase, instead of a backpack. Like it was just that dude.
You know, our buddy Randy Wang, a.k.a. Ryan Wong from KLSX days, he in high school was the youngest manager of any like food service, food court thing at Magic Mountain. And he wore like his short sleeve shirt and his button down Bugs Bunny tie. So he told me in high school he would also wear that to school to show that he's a manager, which I don't think probably went over very
pretty
well.
Pretty sweet.
Oh, God. It seems so insane when you go back and you look at those days. And also, it's funny that there were things that you needed to do with your hair and things you needed to do with your skin, and nobody ever got involved. Like, I never had a conversation with any family member or any adult of like, look, your hair's fucked up. You got to fix your hair. Or here's what you do with a zit. Don't go at it with a pair of needle nose pliers. You have to go at a zit this way. Like, it's just so weird how everyone just sort of was coasting your hair. You must have had hair issues, Gina.
Oh, are you kidding? And I didn't have a sister. Everyone with an older sister knew how to curl their bangs. Mm-hmm. And you could tell who didn't have an older sister because ours were all backwards and cattywampus. But that reminded me, there is something that happened in our middle school that was very common. We actually all look forward to it. That wouldn't be allowed in a middle school today. There would be such a class action hate crime lawsuit against this. And I was thinking about this the other day. There is no way these people are allowed in school anymore. When you were in seventh and eighth grade in gym class, one day a year, someone would come in from the local modeling recruitment agency. Not a modeling agency, but like one of those modeling schools. You know what I mean?
Barbizon.
Right. Yeah. Something like that. They'd come in and they'd tell these awkward, gawky 12-year-old and 13-year-old girls, you know, what it takes to be a model and get all the girls all excited. And then one by one, because this was a special day, you would stand up and be critiqued by the bitch in Shawnee Mission, Kansas, telling you what's wrong with you as you're going through puberty. So one by one, she'd go, straighten your hair, fix your teeth. You probably going to need a nose job. Make sure the hair stays tame. And like, oh, thank you. Oh, God. Can you imagine somebody coming into the school and just taking down little girls like that have already have no self-esteem?
I was talking to Stromer earlier today. We're doing an Ace on the House, and he was he used to be what we called hyperkinetic, I think, back in the day, where it just had, now it's ADD or whatever it is.
He can move things with his mind?
They called it hyperkinetic back in the day. It was like global warming used to be ecology or stuff like that. Yeah. We just had like different names for stuff. And
No, when I was young, it was you're hyper. I have every report card. Ryan's very hyper.
He's hyper. Well, Stromer was very hyper, and I guess he was in, I don't know, maybe he's probably in Michigan or something. And when he was in he had a teacher in the eighth grade that had a refrigerator box that, like, with the bottom and the top cut off. And when Stromer would sit down on his desk, he'd lower the refrigerator box over him, and he'd just work out of this box.
That's creative thinking.
And he started doing murals on the inside of the box and stuff like that. But could you imagine having your kid working out of a box now?
That's a dunce cap.
And it's essentially a dunce cabin. It's not even a cap. You live in this. It's a dunce cabin you live in.
That's
it's a
great.
Dunce flat. And by the way, the number one, the thing that's so funny whenever you talk to these guys, and like, you know, I at the same time he was in his dunce box, I was in the donkey squad with Mr. Walters at Walter Reed Elementary, sitting in a corral with a bunch of other dumb kids in our PE class. And it's so funny, we see it through the lens of 2020, you know. So like, you go, Stromer, what'd you tell your parents? Like, what were your parents outraged? Like, his dad was a creative guy who would be outraged by this. And it's like, oh, you didn't tell your parents. Their first question would be, why do you need a box around you?
What did you do?
Yeah, what'd you do? And I didn't say anything about the donkey squad either. Like, no one said anything. That's just how it worked. Yes, simpler times. Also,
yeah, good
times. When I think about these yearbooks, I had like best figure, best physique, best looking. And we had one in junior high and in, I think, in high school too. We had biggest flirt.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, simpler times.
Different time.
They can't have best looking anymore in modern day. Could you have best looking and best figure and physique in modern day yearbooks?
Well, and what did best figure mean for a girl? It only meant one thing.
Titties.
There you go.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really, it's like, who in the ninth grade's got the biggest tits? Then that's who wins.
Big
that's
north who, of the border.
That's who wins the competition every year. Right.
And guess what? It wasn't me.
What?
It wasn't me. I was a lanky.
Who is this unicorn?
I know. I got to show you. I was lanky, flat. Yeah, this is a later thing, man.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah. Prove it. No, it really wasn't, though. I mean, there were girls that had, you know, like, you could tell they had back problems. That was not, that didn't hit college.
Is the winner from your high school yearbook good at the news?
That's funny.
All right, what else we got, Gina Grand?
Well, there's a gift from above for you, Adam, because Maxine Waters making the news. Mm. She's, of course, California Democratic rep. She was seen pulling over to keep an eye on police officers who were conducting a routine traffic stop involving a black man in LA. This is according to the report, and I do have the video I'll show you in a second. Waters was driving in her home district over the weekend when she parked her car, walked over to the LA County Sheriff patrol car, and just wanted to sort of see what was going on. Somebody was filming her from across the street, and this is the exchange.
Hmm. You pull it over!
I stopped her brother, so I stopped to see what they were doing.
Right? Okay.
So they say I'm in the wrong place, so they're going to give me a ticket. That's okay, as long as I watch them.
Gotta do what they gotta do, make sure.
All right.
Was that Gary from Weird Science?
Give me the keys.
Give me the keys, Lisa.
Big yes, old titties.
You don't even have his license, Lisa.
On the telephone. So she said they stopped a brother, and I pulled over, and I want to make sure everything's on the up and up. And speaking of traffic stops, real quick, you know, with the police brutality protests and the racial injustice and everything across the country, some left-wing activists, this is according to Fox News, have suggested ceasing routine traffic stops by police officers. So who would do them? Well, in Berkeley, California, they're moving forward with a proposal to eliminate police from conducting them and having unarmed civilian city workers. How well do you think that would go over? Think people just peel off?
I
fucking tree trimmer pulls you.
Yeah.
I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't think it would work. But you know, the thing about cops, well, they pull you over for two reasons. They either want to make money or they think something's up. Like, they think you got something in the car, they're either looking for something or it's just a pure cash grab, you know. And the part where they're doing the cash grab, I, of course, don't like, because I don't like them deputized, pardon the pun, just to raise money.
Yeah.
But as I think about it, you know, they pulled over those guys, the North Hollywood bank robber guys. They pulled those guys over probably 5 miles from where I'm sitting right now in, like, Eagle Rock, I think. They popped the trunk, and they found police scanners, guns, banana clips, assault rifles, ski masks, duct tape. They found everything in that car, but they didn't catch them robbing a bank. They just caught him planning on robbing a bank. So they ended up giving him a little bit of time. And then when they got out, they gave him all their shit back. They gave him all the police scanners and the I don't know if they gave him the banana clips back, but they gave him like the ski mask and the duct tape and all their shit back. And then they did the North Hollywood bank robbery. So I don't even know how good. I don't know what a citizen. I don't know what someone without a gun or out of anything would do if they pulled those two guys over and popped the trunk and saw AR-15s and AK-47s.
Well, and that's what one of the police spokesmen said. They said, it sounds boring, it sounds routine, but you have literally no idea what you're walking up to when you stop and pull someone over. So if you think you can do it better than an armed person that's ready to rock, then, go for it.
They didn't get their firearms or their explosives back. I guess they had grenades or something, but they got
standards.
In the car, they found two semi-automatic rifles, two handguns, more than 1,600 rounds of rifle ammunition, 1,200 rounds of handgun ammunition, scanners, smoke bombs, improvised explosive devices, body armor vests, and three different California license plates.
Yeah.
See, did they get all the license plates back?
Yeah, they got them.
Here's what I don't get. Those guys then shot up an entire region of the San Fernando Valley when they did the North Hollywood. The movie Heat was loosely based on that incident. Or
wait. I think Heat predated it.
Oh, well, didn't now he? You got to look.
I can know for a fact he was 95. I think this went down in 99.
No, this was earlier than...
This was it went down in 96.
Oh, 96?
Yeah, May 96.
I was in college, I remember.
Two branches of Bank of America in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, so Heat came out before this?
Then I thought I got the idea.
I can tell you right now. Go. 1995. Jesus. It was based on a previous Michael Mann project called L.A. Takedown, which was several years earlier. So, of course, shootouts are shootouts. They happen and they're in movies and whatever. But no, this was the other way around.
I agree with Bald Brian.
Oh, that's what it was. I always heard it the other way. Either way, they shot up everything and they gave them all their shit back. And my thing was always like, So you could go into Dawson's house and you could find a pillowcase full of weed and it would be on his bed. I'm not saying he would, that's what he uses to sleep, but I'm saying you find a pillowcase full of weed and you could bust him for intent to distribute if he had over, 4 ounces or whatever it is. You don't have to catch Dawson selling weed. You just have to catch him with over X amount of weed. Right. And then you go, hey, you didn't catch me selling weed, but I know you were going to sell this weed. So we're just going to treat you like you were selling the weed. And you could go, I happen to like a lot of weed around my house. I don't want to have to go to the park every 2 days. So I buy in bulk, like Costco. And you go, nope, intent to distribute. So my feeling is if the law works that you get intent to fill in the blank with drugs, why can't we have intent to rob a bank?
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense.
In that rule, their rule is like, well, they didn't rob a bank. We can't do anything until they rob a bank. Well, they did rob a bank, and they shot up everybody.
That's the same thing with restraining orders and with missing persons and kidnappings. Well, they haven't murdered anyone yet. Well, would you like to hear the messages on my voicemail? It's just like, well, we'll have to wait and see.
Right. So I got the story backward that one of the shooters had a copy of Heat, and it was really? Like they were inspired by Heat versus the other way around. All right, let me hit. Yes.
The shootout took place on February 1997. And Albert Hughes of the Hughes Brothers is developing a movie called North Hollywood. Don't know what stage it's in now because of the lockdown and everything, but a feature film about the shootout.
It's a crazy story. I remember where I was. Of course, North Hollywood's where I hail from, and that was the bank that was down Laurel Canyon. And I just remember the shit going down, and I remember just hearing about it. And it was a crazy story. Garagos, of course, represented the mother.
Oh, no.
I love this story.
He represented the mother of one of the guys of the North Hollywood guys, and got and they settled. They sued the city of Los Angeles. The North Hollywood bank robbers both died in the event. One committed suicide when he was sort of cornered. The other was shot by the cops and bled out. The one who was shot by the cops and bled out, they sued. His mother sued Los Angeles for a wrongful death. and I think won with Garrigus leading the charge. All right, let me tell you about LifeLock. Cyber criminals taking advantage of the pandemic, yo. Sending out malware to scam people, trying to learn about cures. They've even devised counterfeit online pharmacies. It's so important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info out there on the internet. You could miss certain identity threats if you're just monitoring your credit alone. LifeLock detects a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your info has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert. Protect yourself with a LifeLock, right, Dawson?
If you become a victim of identity theft, LifeLock can help you restore your identity easier than what you can do on your own. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
All right. Let's do one more, Gina Grad.
All right. Well, we haven't talked about Karens in a couple of days, and I have a few, but we'll save the rest for tomorrow. So a while back, I believe we talked about it, there was a woman who had shamed this sort of young Starbucks employee because he asked her to wear a mask. It's part of their policy in the store. And she went crazy and she put it on social media, on her Facebook. And can you believe this guy? His name is Lennon Gutierrez and he's trying to get me to wear a mask. And who does he think he is? So a lot of people saw this video and instead of siding with her, they started a GoFundMe page for young Lennon. And they raised over $100,000 in tips for him. Okay, great. Nice story. It's done. Well, the woman who originally put him on blast, Lynn Gillis, she's not happy about this. She says she's now considering suing to collect her half of those funds because she claims
she made him famous.
She has underlying health issues that make her medically exempt from mask mandates, and it's not fair that he gets rewarded and she doesn't. By the way, the two medical notes that she has, one is from a chiropractor and one is from an OBGYN. So I'm not sure what she breathes out of, but that is those were the two notes that she thought made her exempt. And she wants half that money from the kid she shamed that working minimum wage that said, could you please put your mask on?
I'd talk more about it, but Garrigus is representing her, so...
Oh, sure,
he
yeah.
kind of told me in confidence, but he feels pretty sure. good about this one. He says he's getting way more than half, and he's taking that kid to the cleaners. So, Jesus Christ. You know what? I don't... It's like, first things first. Nobody has to go in and get a cup of coffee. You don't have to. You there's certain things in life that we realize are sort of a necessity, and then other things are like, again, it's my same argument. Ben Shapiro is going to be on the San Antonio show at the Improv on the July 31st, and here's my point. If Ben Shapiro is speaking on your college campus, you do not have to watch him. You don't have to attend. You don't have to go. You don't have to even show up that day if you don't want to, and you don't have to get a cup of coffee. But if, in fact, you choose to get a cup of coffee, then here are the rules. You have to put this mask on. And then you can go, well, I have breathing difficulties or whatever it is. Fine. Then you do not get to have the cup of coffee at that place. You get to go home and make your own cup of coffee. The rules are you have to wear a mask when you enter this place. And if you can't do it or you won't do it, I'm not a big mask wearer myself, but I don't look at the businesses who, by the way, are just doing it for insurance purposes for sure, telling you to wear a mask. That's part of their business. Just like I don't argue with the people at the airport security when they want right. me to take my belt off. There's nothing in my belt. I'm not a terrorist. Fine. This is the protocol. Sadly, if you want a cup of coffee or you want to get on a Southwest flight, you got to take your belt off. You got to put your mask on. That's it.
Well, and right. And on the other side of that coin, as you've said many times, if you can't fly without a dog, then maybe flying's not for you. If you can't go in this business without causing a ruckus, maybe going into this business is not for you.
On the other hand, as someone who's never benefited from a fake online doctor's note, maybe I could get a note that says I don't need to wear a mask. And then I would combat all the I would then cough on all the people who are traveling with their dogs.
Yeah, go see your OBGYN and get a note.
That's right.
That's good. I'll go. Also, I don't know if you saw that meme, and you know whether, you know, like we talked about with laughter, whether you think it's correct or you agree or not, it's very funny. The meme, I sent it to Chris, so maybe he has it, but wearing a mask is just like being with somebody who's peeing. So if a guy is totally naked and he's peeing everywhere, then that pee is going to get on you. But if you're wearing pants, then there'll be a little less pee on your legs. But if he's wearing pants, the pee mostly stays with him. And if you're both wearing pants, that pee stays with him and you're not going to get any splashback. So it was a very funny way of saying, you know, the fabric masks, those don't matter anyway. Well, jeans make a difference when somebody's whizzing all over the place.
You got the meme, Max Spana?
It's very funny.
I got a boner. I found talking.
Okay, here it is.
Fired up my outboard motor. Let's see. I've not seen this.
Are fabric masks sensible? I will try to explain. If we're all running around naked and someone pees on you, you are wet immediately. If you're wearing trousers, some of the pee will still get through to you, but not so much. You are better protected. But now, if the one peeing at you also wears pants, the pee remains only with him and you will not get wet. Now, what do you think?
It's good, but as a guy who's been peed on many times wearing slacks,
find no quarter here, Gina.
It's much better to get peed on poolside when you're not wearing the pants than in the jeans because it just hangs. It hangs.
That's
but I get what they're getting at. I'm just saying,
it's a metaphor.
Someone who's made it a way of life for many years, who's been peed on many times, it's difficult once it hits the super denim. All right, let me hit Geico right now. Geico's offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies. That's 15% on top of the money Geico is already saving you. Never been a better time to switch over to Geico and save a bunch of money. Now you get to save the extra 15% if you switch by October 7th. Plenty of time, but I don't know. Let's not snooze and lose. Visit geico.com. to learn more. All right. I will be in Addison, Texas, and that's at the Improv right there in Dallas, Friday, Saturday. Coming up, we'll do a live podcast there, and then we'll also do some stand-up there. And Ben Shapiro and Greg Gutfeld are going to join Friday and Saturday in San Antonio coming up the following weekend. So go to amcroll.com for all that. The Tempe date's made up. It's going to be made up at September 18th and 19th. And you can check out the stand-up on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Adam Carolla. And get the book and check out David Paul Kuhn's book, The Hard Hat Riot, as well on Amazon as long as you're there. And until next time, this is Adam for David and Gina and Bald saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and get Adam's new book. I'm your emotional support animal. It's in stock, and the links are at adamcarolla.com.